Well, what's up? Whoa, that's good, fam. I am so pumped for this podcast, as I am normally always pumped. But today, especially, we have a great person on the podcast. I've actually never really hung out with this person yet, but he seems amazing from afar, and I can't wait to interview him. So welcome, Bear from Need to Breathe, to the podcast.
Nice. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you on. Honestly, everyone that I've told that you were going to be on the podcast has been very excited. We got some big fans around here.
Nice.
And I would be lying if I said I wasn't. Actually, whenever, you know, I was going to get to do this podcast, I was so excited because in high school, me and my brother, like, I remember it so vividly. We'd have all the doors off to the Jeep and we'd crank up Wash by the Water. Like, that was our song. And one of my favorite songs still is Difference Maker. I love that song. So we've been listening to y'all's music for a long time. So I was very excited to have you on the podcast. And we're going to get into talking about your new album, Into the Mystery, soon. But first, I have to ask you the question that I ask everyone. What is the best piece of advice that you have ever been given?
You know, I thought about that a little bit, and that's a tough one. There's a bunch of ways I could go with that. But I think the best advice I've been given is to remember that everybody has a story. And that if we don't know it, maybe we shouldn't be rushing a judgment on that story.
That's good.
You know, I think I'm especially someone who has a microphone in my face a lot. And it's easy to kind of weigh in, you know what I mean? But it feels like every person I meet, that story is so extenuating and crazy. And so anyway, it's something I need a reminder of.
That's so true. That's so good. It's even like, this is so for the now, but with the Simone Biles thing, with her stepping out of the Olympics, that's a classic example of everyone has a story. No one knows. Yep. No one knows what's actually happening. And so who are we to have our own little opinion about someone else's big story?
For sure.
So that's such good advice. I love that. So a lot of people know you from Need to Breathe, or I know you have your own stuff going on now too, but let's backtrack to just your family life, because I know my listeners are typically a lot of college girls and are suckers for relationship stories. So okay. how did you and your wife meet?
We met in college. We went to the same school, a little school in South Carolina called Furman. This is kind of crazy for me to think about, but our first date, I was a little bit of a romantic, I guess. I took her to the airport to watch planes take off and have a conversation.
No way.
Yeah. And also, I was probably just cheap. but we go there and we had this insane conversation. And she was a couple years younger than me, so... I just was blown away by her and what she wanted to do in life and what she cared about. And we talked for a couple hours, I think, on the first date. And then I called my mom that night and I was like, I'm going to marry this person.
Wow.
Which is probably silly to think back, but I just knew like there was something to this. And then we dated a little while, and then she was a freshman in college at the time, and she would admit this to you, that she kind of got like a little agreeable, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? She just was kind of like, and I think I was a junior at the time. So we broke up for a summer, and she went home and became this, like, she was like, you know, just hardcore, Brad Pitt would be lucky to date me kind of, you know, that attitude.
That's awesome.
And so when she came back from college, we were both on an FCA like board thing together, and I did music, she did something else. So it was really it. It was kind of amazing. And then quickly after that, we were dating, she became the band's first booking agent.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So she was good at multitasking, better than I was. I played football and did school, but not much school. I talked her into doing that. So luckily she doesn't have to do that anymore, but that's where we started.
That's awesome. Yeah, I did see that you played football and you were actually like really good. You low key were like, yeah, I played football, but I Googled you and you were legit. did you ever think that you would do something in football, or did you always have your heart on music?
I probably did at some point, but pretty quickly. The band formed when I was a freshman at school. So, I mean, nobody took us seriously or anything, but we were kind of taking ourselves seriously. And we started doing, I don't know, 50 or 60 shows a year while I was playing football.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I think I knew pretty quickly, no matter where the football thing went, I wanted to do music.
That's cool.
Yeah, which was an insane choice when you're in college. It just says it doesn't, especially at a good school. I was getting a scholarship too.
Yeah,
my parents were like,
sure,
you should do something with this education you got given.
Oh my gosh. But hey, sometimes it works out. Like my grandpa, people know him as like the Duck Commander, but 40 years ago or so, he was playing football and he was actually ahead of Terry Bradshaw at his school. He was the starting quarterback. Then he left football to build duck calls and everybody thought he was crazy. And that was way crazier than starting a band. You actually had some good direction and some promise. He went with duck calls. That's really cool. So how did Need to Breathe come to be? You said you were a freshman.
Yeah. We were the annoying kids on the hall and with a djembe and a couple of acoustic guitars. It's very coffee house-ish vibes, for a while. And we just wrote songs. I never really, was the kind of cover band person. I never knew. I mean, still to this day, I know how to play like three other people's songs. So I just was trying to write songs and figure it out. And we were just, probably taking it way too seriously, to be honest with you, at the time. But we knew it was kind of a calling. And I think I knew I was kind of waiting on that calling to happen in my life. I grew up with a preacher as a dad and that kind of thing. So I was like, that felt natural to me. And then sort of when I stumbled on the music thing, I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. And we just started playing like the clubs around town, honestly. And we made a little circle a little later about like 5 hours around our campus. We got to be the biggest band in that circle or whatever, you know. But it was a lot of self-promotion and just hard work, really. Because even when I got out of school, the band was together for like 4 more years before we got signed.
Wow.
There weren't a lot of up arrows pointing for us at the time. So that's kind of, I think that sort of rootsiness is sort of still ingrained in us. Mm-hmm. And also an appreciation for kind of what we have.
Yeah.
It was a long, slow climb, if that makes sense.
No, that's cool. Yeah, because I think a lot of people see people where they're at when they make it big and then they want to do that, but they don't know that takes a lot of years and that takes a lot of hard work. So what you said, you kind of felt like it was your calling, but even in that, I love how you were like, we wanted to be like the biggest band here. So where y'all are at now, has that just like far exceeded any expectations that y'all ever thought your band would be?
For sure. I had zero idea of, I mean, honestly, our biggest goal at the time was just play the club in town and try to sell it out, 500 tickets, you know?
That's awesome.
I remember like our second album, that's the first time that actually happened in the Southeast. We've been playing all these places like 20 times, opening for people and all that stuff before they sold out the very first time. And when they did, we thought, this is as big as it gets. This is amazing.
You made it.
I didn't even know there was another venue we could play.
That's awesome. So what was y'all's like breakthrough moment, if you will, or was there? Because I feel like sometimes people look back and they're like, it just kind of happened slowly. But was there a moment for y'all that it really felt like a transition?
I think the third record we made was called The Outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And that record, I think, was the first where we sort of understood what we were doing all of a sudden. Like, everybody thinks you're making music, which you are, but you're really trying to have a communication or like a conversation with your audience, and the music is just a way to do that, I think.
And
I think the bigger bands figure that out, that it's just a tool, you know. I think for us, we spent the first record trying to be something we weren't, and then we tried to the second we're trying to prove that we can do everything, you know. And then it was like The Outsiders just felt like a record where we were talking just like it was coming from us.
Cool.
And that just started to connect. And I even remember the first time around we were touring on that record, it felt like the tickets weren't necessarily selling more, but the comments we were getting back from people were like, I'm living my life to this, or I had someone pass and this is what this song got me through.
Wow.
And we were calling our management and stuff. We're like, I know you don't believe us, but something is happening. It feels like, you know, we've kind of broken through that thing. And so I do think that was a big moment for us, and it hasn't stopped since, if that makes sense.
Yep. No, you can see that. That's so cool, because it does feel like that happens in life. It's like the times that you try really hard, or you strive for something, or you do something that's not you, it just doesn't work. And then the time that you strip it back, you're like, hey, no matter what happens, I'm just going to be me. That always is what works because it's
sometimes
relatable.
It's incredibly hard to be easy.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. That's so true. We overthink things so much. So I'm interested to hear about like you realizing that this is your call, because that's something we talk about on this podcast a lot. Because I feel like a lot of people, especially with the age group that is listening to me, is like, what is my call in life? And how do you feel like you knew like, oh, this is it? Because, you know, there's so many things that you could have done even with football, or, you know, you're falling in love with this woman, all these different things. How did you know? I feel like this really is the thing that God's going to use in my life.
Yeah, it's tough. I think it's more than one thing. I think, you know, I had a love for it, mm-hmm. first of all, and I think that's huge.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't think it's always. I think I grew up with a lot of siblings and stuff that were missionaries and all those things. Mm-hmm. So it felt very like, oh, this is going to be something terrible place that you don't want to go, and you're going to have to sacrifice everything, you know. Yep. And it's not always that way. It certainly wasn't mm-hmm. that way with me. And I think the gifting was part of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was even unaware of it in some ways, or it took some people coming alongside and saying like, I think maybe you have something, like your
That's
voice is
cool.
unique. And, for me to go like, is it, you know, is it mm-hmm. just weird or is it unique?
No.
It's
awesome.
And so I think some of those things, and then, just a lot of, I have a grandmother that I rely on heavily for these things like this, that was, she sort of spawned all these, missionaries and pastors' wives and musicians and all this stuff. And, and we would have a lot of conversations about that. And it does seem to, you know, I think you can try to force it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You're looking for the calling so bad and you want to sacrifice so bad. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times open doors, really have to play a pretty big role in it.
Yep.
And I think probably a lot of wasted time, even within my calling, you know, is pushing on a door that's just locked.
Yeah, it's good.
Feels like sometimes. And it's just like, I just got to have it this way. I know exactly where this is going to go. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us, you know, I guess my encouragement would be that you know, it takes a lot of time sometimes for people to figure it mm-hmm. out. And also some of those mistakes are also part of the journey.
Yeah.
And I don't even mean like, you know, you learn from them. Of course you do. But like, I feel like some of us are just stubborn, you know, and for me, I really needed to like make all the, just bang into walls for a long time before I was prepared for what the next step is.
Yep. So true.
And so maybe I was a slow learner or whatever it was, but it does seem to me it made me ready to have a different conversation now mm-hmm. than I ever could have if I hadn't gone that way. So there's some trust in that, you know. I think I don't know, I would just encourage people, they don't feel like they have that calling yet, they probably don't, and that's okay.
That's,
you know,
good.
This is part of like, this is your tent making season, you know?
Yeah, that's so good. I love that. One of my favorite verses is in Psalms. It talks about like, unless the Lord builds a house, the labor in vain. And it goes on to say like, they eat the bread of anxious toil, but the ones that trust in him, he gives his beloved sleep. And I love that because I can think back into the times where I was trying to like get something started, you know? And it just doesn't happen. It doesn't start. Again, you run into the walls. We tried to do a tour like way prematurely and it just didn't work. Like we sold like 40 tickets one time and like in a Reno, we're like, okay, not working, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, you just try so hard and, you know, eventually I kind of laid that down and was like, God, you know, I'm going to let you build this thing. And since then, now things are happening, but I'm not so anxious. I'm not so stressed because I'm not trying to make it happen. I'm just responding, like saying yes every day. And it's so cool to see that happen. And I think it's inspiring for people to hear that from you, especially even like the, not insecurity, but the questioning of, is my voice cool? Is it unique? Is it just, you know, whatever? Because when people see someone like you, they're like, oh, well, if I had that voice, then I would be confident. Then I would know.
Right.
But to know that everybody has to say yes to the call God has on their life. Everybody has to, you know, trust him with that and choose to be confident in what he's given you. It doesn't just come naturally, even if you're super talented. So that's
sure.
That's cool to hear. So you have three boys, right?
Yes.
With really cool names. What are your boys' names?
Yeah. Wilder, Woods, and Waters.
that is just like, that is legit. You and your wife got some good names. And your solo band, well, I guess, is that a band, is Wilder Woods, right? Of your two boys. How do you think being a dad has impacted some of the music that you put out?
I think in every way. Cool. I think the impact happens first with me. You know, it's like they've had such a crazy impact on how I try to live life. And I'm somebody who has dealt with or struggled with anxiety, you know, my whole life. And it's like, it's not sick, like seasonal, but it's cyclical. It feels like if it's not here, it's coming a lot of times. And I think the kids just add a perspective on life for one thing. You know, it's easy to come home now, regardless of how the tour went or the record sold, and it just be like overwhelmed by that feeling that you do belong here and you are loved.
That's cool.
And I think that's powerful, but also just sort of the freedom that they exude. They have completely different personalities. They're not the same at all. And they're all insane. They're all just like, it's all boys. They're 6, 4, and 11 months. And it's like, it's just chaos all the time. But the thing that they all sort of share, which is this beautiful thing, like of when they walk in the room, they could just be butt naked with their arms out. And like, they're like, here I am, world, take me. You know, they're just so open to experiences.
Yeah.
And I think it really showed me like how often I'm not like that.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, man, if they can do it, surely I can. So a lot of the stuff that we've talked about on the last couple of records, I think have to do with that idea. And obviously, there's so much, you know, trauma that happens along life that causes those things. And we start to react those ways. And then we get habits that, you know, it's like you can tell I've been in therapy. But it's just, I feel like a lot of the records, the last couple records anyway, have been really heavily on that.
Yeah.
You know, tackling things like being a little easier on yourself. You know, I feel like probably one of the most common things, I think people, you know, lay in bed at night, like, should I have said that? Should I have done that?
Oh, all that, all the time.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
And that's just crippling.
Yes.
and so anyway, I feel like that battle that I'm on, I try to communicate that in the songs now, and hopefully people can relate to it.
Yeah.
I've never been I mean, our band's always said this, like, we're not trying to teach anybody anything. Mm-hmm. We don't have any of the answers. We more about experiential, you know, relationships that we're trying to show people it's okay to ask those questions and feel those ways, but it's also okay to move on from it.
Yep. I love that. You definitely get that in your music. I actually wrote down a line. My favorite song on the newest album, one that really spoke to me, was What I'm Here For. And that song, you're right, it makes you question some things in your life that are so good to question. And I love how you said, I say, God, I'm only human. He would say, that's what I'm here for. And I think that that's so good, because so many times, you know, we feel like we need to be something bigger than ourselves, because there's this expectation that the world puts on us to be that. And that can be crippling, and that can make you really fearful, because you know you can't be that. And so that was such a good reminder. Even when I was listening to that, I was like, wow, like, yeah, that's what God's for. Like, that's who he is. That's who he's going to be. So I was going to ask you, like, what that song meant to you as you were writing it.
Yeah, that one means a lot to me. I think it's kind of what I've been going through. I grew up super like conservative Christian parents that were great, but also products of the 80s and all those things. And what I mean by that is just like, that was a very rigid time. And basically it was like, all things are off limits. Let's talk more about things we don't do than the things we do.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of absolute truths. That's just the way my Sunday school was growing up. So you can imagine it creates this thing where like righteousness is somehow this inner circle that we've got to keep working on. The longer you do it, you get closer and closer, and that's where God is, you know?
Yeah.
And I've found in my life that to be the opposite of the truth. I've found that surrender can only happen when you realize that you've screwed it up.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the worst place that you could possibly be, and you give up, and then God's like, I love you more now than ever.
Yeah.
And that's such a powerful kind of turnaround. So I think that's what that song's about. Like, I need room to be wrong sometimes, is in that chorus before it says
that.
And it's like, I really feel like that's true with me. And it's a reminder, you know, of some things. I went through some pretty heavy stuff 6 or 7 years ago, in our family and with my wife, and just really, And that was the truth that I took away. It's like, man, I messed this all up. And the second I was like, I can't do anything, God, if I don't care what happens with this situation. Like, I don't know if I'm going to lose my family. I'm going to lose my job, all these things. Like, but God, I know I need you. God's love during that moment was stronger than I'd ever felt it in my life when I was trying so hard.
Wow, that's powerful. Because I read somewhere that you like had written like a ton of songs during quarantine. It was like 70 or something. It was crazy. Like, what does that writing process look like for you? Is it something that when you go to channel all the emotions that you're thinking about or process things that you're going through, does it just flow out, or sometimes it's more of a stretch and a search?
I could write every day probably if I just put myself in a space. Like, I really gotten into the sort of not a ritual, but almost like this thing, like, I want to make the room clean and, you know, put some incense on and like really get into a place.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So that's been, I could probably do that every day if I wanted. What was cool about this time was we had just put out a record, and I didn't have a record to write for. I was doing some co-writing, but it had gone to like Zoom co-writing, and I didn't love that part anyway. Yeah. So,
it's not the
what
vibe.
Was pretty amazing. What's that?
I said, that's not the vibe.
Yeah, no, it's not the vibe at all. Not the vibe. And so I started just writing with no end in mind. I wouldn't say no purpose, but just no ambition, if that makes sense. And just really started to kind of, be like, if I was a kid, what kind of music would I want to hear?
That's cool.
And, you know, what do I want to? And so, and I, my wife would come in and be like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, just dying laughing because something new happened. And I'd just that's be overwhelmed awesome. With this joy. It's like, I'm just chasing this thing. I don't know what it is. And so I had more fun sort of creating music than I ever had. And I would come in here sometimes and like, I'm going to write a country song, even though I can't write country songs, you know, or whatever it is, you know.
That's fun.
And just have a good day with it. Yeah. And it's crazy that it turned into a record because it certainly wasn't the intention at the beginning.
That's right. So this new record, Into the Mystery, that was not like what you had planned. It just kind of came to be.
Yeah, because the band had put a record out like a year ago.
Yeah,
and
I
so
saw that.
Even the label was like, we're not giving you money to make a record. I had to make some other reason to get the budget for the record, actually.
That's funny.
So it was, yeah, it was just, so that was just very freeing. Like, I don't think art is a means to an end. And, but in music, you can get on that sort of schedule where it's like, oh, well, next year we got to have some content. We got to have whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful to kind of like be a kid again.
That's
I was like
cool.
8 years old. Like, it wasn't my job.
That's awesome.
And so, yeah, I'm loving that part. Like, and we've kind of poured that over now into the touring side too, which is really awesome. We're having more fun than we ever have.
That's awesome. I've actually seen y'all twice live now. So
nice.
Y'all are so much fun. Such a good concert.
Thanks.
And I'm sure it's even just going to get more fun if you're bringing your childlike self into it.
There you go. No doubt.
So for picking out of the 70 songs, was that or more, however many you wrote, was that a hard process for the band, or did y'all kind of all agree like these are the ones?
For the most part, yes. I actually, this time, because I wrote them like I did, and I didn't have that sort of, I don't think I had a great perspective on them, what they were or which ones would fit the band and all that. And so I really relied on Josh and Seth, the bass player and piano player.
Cool.
I would call Josh almost every day on FaceTime and be like, play him a little bit of it. I'm like, is this dumb? Because this is not our normal formula of writing songs, you know?
That's cool.
And he just he was so great with that. Like, he'd be like, yeah, I don't love it.
<That's>
I'll see
awesome.
You tomorrow, you know, whatever. And then it's like, so really I let them pick a lot, which was also very freeing to me. It's kind of like, look, I'm not driving this train.
Yeah.
You know, I get to be on it, but I just am not, you know, making all these decisions, which is nice.
That's so good. You need that person in your life that you can call and say, is this dumb? And they'll genuinely say, yes, that's dumb.
Right. Because <Exactly.
laughs> then you trust them when they say, no, this is actually really good. That's awesome.
Go.
So in a band, you know, you have to work together. I love how you just kind of talked about that. What are some of the things that you feel like y'all teach each other in the process of working together?
Yeah, a ton. I mean, when you get in a band at the beginning, everybody believes the same way, kind of, you know, and then we've been doing this for 20 years. So everybody has grown like out and crazy.
Yeah.
And it's, we raise our families in different ways and we, all those things, you know, we're like different. So sometimes when I feel like people are like, what's the mission statement for the band? I'm like, impossible. It's all over the place. It's such a wide variety. So it's tough to kind of like make it centralized, like what the band means, even what we're yeah. trying to do exactly, you know, cause it's a group, it's a collective really at this point. Yeah. But I think we do learn, how much you just need each other. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's what everybody's been, saying maybe from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's a lesson everybody's learned,
it's
but
the truth.
I think
yeah.
for us, we just value the time and this time outside of music more than mm-hmm. we ever have. And nobody knows what it's like behind the curtain in our world, except for the people that are behind it. And so I think that's a really huge thing, to try to figure out how to empower the people around you to have mm-hmm. that voice. I'm kind of a, like I'm an Enneagram 8, which you know what that means? Like I'm ready to fight at all times.
Yes. We just
and
had
I love a
like,
good fight.
We just had a guy who like really specialized in the Enneagram on the podcast last week. So everybody gets what you're talking about.
Okay, nice.
So you're an
yeah,
eight.
So, so there awesome. You go. I'm ready. I'm a challenger or whatever. I'm like ready to roll. It's good to have people that I'm like, man, it might be tough for you to challenge me because I'm going to, if I feel threatened or whatever, here we go. Mm-hmm. And so I think the thing we've like really tried to train and teach and also it really has to do with the individual. I think, mm-hmm. Is to empower them to have the voice when it comes mm-hmm. time. I was like, man, you're being whack. Like,
yep.
you gotta start, we got to back this up a couple steps. Like, you yep. can't talk to that guy this way, or you're looking at the situation all wrong. So,
yeah,
I think a little
cool.
healthy conflict, I guess, is something that we've tried to get better at. And I think it's huge.
It's cool. It's awesome. So this new album is already out and people are loving it. Like I said, whenever I told some people that you were going to be on the podcast, they're like, oh my gosh, we love their new album. So it's definitely going good here in Louisiana. What are some things that you want people to feel and take from it as they listen?
Yeah, I think a lot of those lessons, I think that probably the biggest thing is it's okay to make mistakes and mm-hmm. that we are going to make them. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, you know, the record's called End of the Mystery. Mm-hmm. It really is this huge question I have in my brain, because I felt like growing up conservative Christian kind of thing, I felt sometimes like, and I don't think it was their intention at all, but I felt like if they loved me as long as I was like between these two lines, mm-hmm. you know, as long as I was doing what I was supposed to.
Yeah.
And I sort of resented that feeling and
yeah.
you long for that freedom to be like, to have people that would love you no matter where you go.
Yeah.
But now that I have kids and I'm telling them every day, like we have it written on our wall, you know, like I love you no matter what you do.
That's cool.
And that's a lot easier to say than it is to do, because they go to school and they hit somebody, you know? So I think I'm sort of wrestling with that in a way, you know what I mean? I'm trying yeah. to figure it out and live it out as good as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the band I think was going through a lot of those situation. So I don't know if it was meant to teach anybody anything, but just like to say, like, we feel you, you know, if you're
yeah.
feeling this way, if you're kind of off on a new journey.
Cool.
You know, we lost, my brother left the band a couple years ago, which mm-hmm. was kind of crazy. And then the pandemic happens, like you can't tour and all these, just
yeah.
a lot of uncertainties, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt really good about where we were going, but we were kind of not sure if everybody would go with us, if that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, I think that's, I think that's the takeaway. I hope it is.
No, that's so good. That it's very relatable to a lot of people. You know, just with all that being said and how, you know, you grew up a conservative Christian, for your relationship now with God, do you feel like with this mindset of having that freedom, do you feel like it's drawn you a lot closer to him and has impacted your faith in a deeper way?
I do. It's tricky because I think in some ways, the more I question things, the closer to God I am, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think the more real my faith is.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like for a long time, it was like, I would never do that. I would never do that. And as long as all those boundaries are up there, it's like, are you really making a choice or what's
yeah.
happening here?
Yeah.
I think for me, it's been a really sweet time to
it's
go
cool.
like, man, there's just so much grace and so many second, third, 15 chances that you get.
It's cool.
I feel like I don't deserve any of the things that are going on mm-hmm. now with the band, or to even be in a band still, it seems insane.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just really thankful, and that feels very sweet. And I think it's, you know, you probably heard it with people talking about their kids, and you probably feel it already.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at your kid, you're not looking for something from them.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They really, my kid today literally pooped in the woods and it got all over his pants and everything. And I was like, bro, you know, what are you doing? You're almost 4 years old. You can't do that. And still we get here and it's like, we hug it up and it's like, it's all good, you know? And so there's something definitely to be said about, I feel about the way, you know, I feel loved by God in spite of all my weaknesses.
So cool. That's what you hear in your music, and just even with you sharing, it feels like such a relationship. And that's what's cool. I mean, I've experienced that with my daughter already. You're so right. It's like the way that you feel love for them, when you have the revelation that that's how you're loved by God, it is the most freeing thing, and really very a cool feeling. Well, I've loved this conversation, and I think people are going to absolutely love the new album. Shout it out one more time, Into the Mystery. It's so good. And now you got a little bit of a backstory on how it came to be and a little bit of a backstory about your life. So thanks for sharing all of your stories. Seriously, I'm so impacted. And now I can't wait to go back and listen to it, knowing a little bit more of the heart behind it. So thank you so much, Bear, for being on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.